From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. You know, we got a great show for you this week, got a lot to cover, but first, if you will, before we begin, allow me a moment of personal reflection. I'm at an age now where I ask myself, is all of this what I really wanted in life? And I think if you could go back to the 1970s and find the 10-year-old me, and if you ask that little boy, Peter, what is your dream in life? He probably would have said, well, deep in my heart of hearts, I dream of being able to one day to spend some quality time with Mr. Spock. Today, ladies and gentlemen, that dream comes true. Today, Leonard Nimoy will be here right on our stage to play Not My Job. Today, a complete dork finds true happiness. But I've also dreamed of talking to you, believe it or not. So give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jonathan Colon in Miami.
Hey, Jonathan, how are you?
I'm very good.
What do you do there in Miami?
I'm a federal prosecutor.
Oh, no.
So watch it.
I was about to say. So you go after the bad guys.
Yes, I do. My son would tell you I put pirates in jail.
Do you really?
Well, a smuggler and a hijacker, but he thinks they're pirates. So
that's great. I mean, we've seen TV shows set in Miami. Do you get to drive around in cigarette boats and not shave and date hot women?
Well, my wife is extremely attractive.
Of course. Well done, sir. Well done. Let me introduce you to our panel this week, Jonathan. First, say hello to a writer for Boston Globe magazine, Mr. Charlie Pierce is here.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Jonathan.
Next, it's one of the women behind the Washington Post's Reliable Sources column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Roxanne.
Hi. I'm envisioning you in a white suit and no tie.
Sleeves rolled
tan.
Up a little.
Yeah.
Loafers, but you do that with everybody.
Also say hello to a comedian who will next be performing at the Vixen in Provincetown, Massachusetts on October 11th and 12th, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hey, Jonathan.
Jonathan, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will read you three quotes from the week's news. Not a lot happening this week, so they're hard to find. But we'll see what we can do. If you are able to correctly identify two out of three, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice in your home answering machine.
Great.
You can have him reading somebody their rights, perhaps, if you want to save that time. All right, let's start this week with a headline from USA Today.
The party's over.
So, where are the balloons and bunting crashing back to Earth this week?
Oh, I'm guessing Wall Street.
You would be correct. Every day over the past week, major financial institutions went belly up faster than a kennel full of puppies wanting to be scratched. As the latest crisis began over the weekend, as Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch stepped up to the guillotine, the federal government said, "Sorry, pals, you're on your own. Maybe you'll learn next time not to invest billions of dollars in securities guaranteed by Beanie Babies." But then, after that earthquake, AIG, the largest insurance company in the world, started to falter, and the government actually borrowed $80 billion to buy it out. Why the change of heart? Well, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson explained, quote, "This time the magic eight ball said all signs point to yes." Now, there's a lot to talk about this, but one of the things this means is that now you, the American taxpayer, you now own one of the largest financial institutions in the world. So my suggestion is, yeah, exactly, go buy. Ask to use the executive washroom. Use the corporate jet to take your kids to soccer practice. It's yours. You guys worry?
I already went broke, so none of this means anything to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I apparently have a gift as a financial analyst, because I was way ahead of the curve on losing my house.
That's right. You were homeless before homeless was cool, Paula.
Trendsetter Paula Poundstone.
Jonathan, let's move on. Now, all of your quotes are about the current crisis. Here's your next quote.
The American people are concerned about the situation in our financial markets and our economy, and I share their concerns.
That was somebody telling the American people how he was going to deal with the big crisis. We can rest easy knowing that who isn't resting easy.
Oh, would that be President Bush?
It would be. Very good.
I feel better.
We feel the need to remind people of this from time to time, but the current president of the United States is a man named George W. Bush. He used to own the Texas Rangers. Anyway, with the economy pulling a Hindenburg, Mr. Bush made a statement saying that he was worried too. He was worried enough to cancel a fundraiser and that he was staying in Washington to meet with his advisors. And that was about it from the president. So we got some criticism after that brief statement, after 3 days of inaction, that he wasn't doing enough. So the president flew Air Force One in a circle around Lower Manhattan and looked out the window with a sad expression on his face. That helped. People knew he was feeling their pain. Then he announced that FEMA will be providing emergency penthouses to affected bankers. All right, very good, Jonathan. Here is your last quote.
You know what Bush said?
What did Bush say?
Right away, when Lehman Brothers went under, he was so, he just commiserates with the American people in such a beautiful way. He said, well, some people don't even have brothers. He has a way.
It does come as the occasional surprise that he's still president.
You see, I'm really serious about that.
I figured such nobody had the job for a while. You know, job's sort of empty, and it's like the old guy who used to own the gas station who can't quite make it down to the corner anymore, and you just pump your own and keep going along.
You assume he's in there somewhere looking out.
He's playing Game Boy or Wii or something, and occasionally he has to come out and meet a Girl Scout.
Now that the dollar has so little value, we could put him on it.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call in show business a button. All right, Jonathan, here is your last quote. This one is from Douglas Holtz Eakin, John McCain's chief economic advisor. He was explaining to the press just why Senator John McCain is the man to solve this economic crisis.
He did this. You're looking at the miracle John McCain helped create, and that's what he did.
So what important business innovation did John McCain help create? According to his chief
advisor,
you're right, the BlackBerry. You all remember, I'm sure, how the false rumor that Al Gore had claimed to invent the internet swept Gore to victory in 2000. So, Mr. Holtz Eakin decided to go one better. He actually made the overt claim that his candidate, John McCain, was responsible for the BlackBerry. Through his work on telecommunications law.
Now, that's not entirely fair, because Mr. Holtz Eakin he's been misinterpreted. John McCain being of somewhat advanced years, he didn't invent the device, the BlackBerry. He invented the BlackBerry.
Oh, I see. He bred it in the hills of ancient Greece.
He carefully bred it in his dorm room at Annapolis.
I understand. Strangely enough, the campaign later said it was just a bad joke, haha. As for the candidate himself, McCain railed against the greed on Wall Street and said that he would, embrace yourselves, Wall Street, appoint a commission to find out what the heck happened. You know what the commission is going to find? The CEOs of all the companies got these really intriguing emails from these guys in Nigeria. And the next thing you know, as for Barack Obama, he expressed great concern about that financial crisis. He said he himself could solve it, could restore the trillions of dollars. He's simply going to throw another fundraiser with Barbara Streisand. Carl, how did Jonathan do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. 3 correct answers. Jonathan, you win our prize.
Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Charlie, we now return to a story we covered last year, much to the dismay of the residents of the town of Valentine, Nebraska. A criminal has returned, a person who was going around town in the dead of night and doing what?
Valentine, Nebraska. This sounds very familiar.
Yes. I think you three were on the show and we talked about this last year.
I believe you're right, but I need a hint anyway.
People have vowed to get to the bottom of the case.
Oh, this is the mooning guy.
Not quite.
The taking the Xerox of his butt and pinning it up.
Yes,
places,
he's been pressing his behind up against windows.
That's right.
We don't know what he has been doing.
He's the pressed ham bandit, as I
He is the pressed ham bandit, or the butt bandit, as he is called in Valentine. We don't know what he's been doing in the year since his last reign of terror.
Maybe he's been stuck to a window in South Dakota.
But he has decided to strike again. The butt bandit, as he is known, covers his rear in Vaseline and or body lotion and then runs around town pressing his rear against shop windows. The bandit has almost supernatural powers. One night he hit just about every ground level window in a local motel, and despite this, he's never been seen doing it except for a grainy picture on a surveillance tape. He seems to be, from that picture, a tall, slender man with a dark complexion, with his hair and a 1980s feathered look, quote unquote. So now we know where Rick Springfield went. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm Doug Arnholter from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Hey, how are things in Indianapolis?
Wonderful. It's absolutely peachy.
So what do you do there in Indianapolis?
I'm an artist here in Indy.
Oh, really? I didn't think of Indianapolis as an art center.
We've actually got a real vibrant arts community here.
That's great. So you do like crop art and... no, I'm sorry.
No, I give up on the circles. I do better in abstract.
That's good. Well, welcome to the show, Doug. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. What's the topic, Carl?
I'm sorry, so sorry.
Woohoo! That was good. Nobody likes coming clean about embarrassing things in their past, but sometimes you got to do it, even if you're in a powerful position. This week we read a stirring story about a leader making a surprising confession. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about startling admissions from influential people. Choose that real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail, whatever you like.
Cool.
All right, ready to play?
Yes, sir.
First, let's hear it from Roxanne Roberts.
Don't tell anyone, but Geraldine Ferraro is a great cook. At a women's leadership forum in New York last week, the 1984 vice presidential candidate confessed that she bribed her three kids $1,000 each to tell reporters she was hopeless in the kitchen. The Mondale campaign, she told the crowd, asked her to hide her domestic skills for fear she would seem too soft, especially the fact she was an accomplished cook. Before she was announced as running mate, Ferraro told teenagers Donna, John, and Laura to say she never had time to cook and always brought home pizza or McDonald's, when in fact the freezer was stuffed with homemade lasagna, stews, and pastas. Quote, John Jr. really got into it, telling anyone who would listen that I was a lousy cook and not much of a housekeeper either, Ferraro said to laughter. Truth is, it would drive me crazy to break the glass ceiling because I'd have to clean it up.
Geraldine Ferraro admitting that she actually liked to be a homemaker. Your next story of a shocking admission comes from Charlie Pierce.
Elizabeth May, the leader of the Green Party of Canada, confessed this week that, yes, she had never used marijuana. I am not a fan of marijuana use, said Ms. May. I have to confess it. Legalization of the bud is a formal posture of the Green Party in Canada. And, of course, Canada is close to Alaska, and therefore, on both sides of the border, there's a lot of experience with dope in politics. Polling data on this startling admission is still being assembled, but 45% of respondents in one poll said Ms. May's confession would make them less likely to vote for a Green Party candidate. 50% said it would make them more likely to vote for a Green Party candidate, and 5% said, oh, wow, and went out for more Cheetos.
The Green Party candidate in Canada admits, tearfully we assume, that she actually doesn't smoke marijuana. And your last story of a higher-up asking for forgiveness comes from Paula Poundstone.
first-year Spanish students at Steuberville High School in Steuberville, California, heard a shocking confession in any language when their Spanish teacher and head of the Menlo County Foreign Language Department announced that she had never spoken nor studied the Spanish language, but that she could use a dictionary as good as the next guy and has eaten at Taco Bell many times. "She was very nice," said student Jake Shapinky. "But when I asked what that squiggly thing over the end was, she said it was a typo." When angry parents called for the dismissal of both Principal Diane Pulo and Ms. Byrne, Pulo defended herself, saying that during the job interview, the Spanish teacher spoke in a very believable accent.
All right. Here, then, are your choices to review from Roxanne Roberts how Geraldine Ferraro admitted that she just loved to bake and had to pretend that she didn't for political reasons. From Charlie Pierce, the leader of the Green Party, which is very pro-marijuana, admitting to her followers that she herself is not. And from Paula Poundstone, a Spanish teacher in California, admitting that she doesn't speak Spanish. Which of these is the real story about somebody fessing up?
Feels like the Green Party to me.
You do? It feels like that to you?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's your choice. You're choosing Charlie's story. Well, we spoke to somebody who had some insight into this odd confession.
I'm really glad that Elizabeth May has apologized, and I accept her apology on behalf of all the stoners in America.
That was Rick Cusick, the associate publisher of Yes, High Times magazine. Congratulations. You got it right. You earned a point for Charlie Pierce. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your own home answering machine. Thank you for playing with us today. Well done, sir. Well done.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And now the game where we ask very well-known people about very obscure topics. Leonard Nimoy is an internationally famous fine art photographer. He's an author, a poet, a musician. But none of those wonderful things are the reason I have to keep myself, fanboy that I am, from jumping up and down in excitement. You may also be familiar with his work as an actor, portraying Spock, the half-Vulcan, half-human officer on the Starship Enterprise in the original Star Trek. If you are not familiar with this, well, then you are dead to me. Leonard Nimoy, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
I want to jump right in with the most important question. In the episode of Muck Time, I'm not going to do that. No, I do want to.
That was one of our best, by the way.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah, it really was.
Written by Theodore Sturgeon.
I'm so glad you mentioned it.
Yeah,
Spock was in heat.
He was.
Happens once every 7 years.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Well worth waiting for.
I know. It's interesting because, of course, an actor's question is, "What's my motivation?" But in that episode. Boy.
Yeah.
Now, what I wanted to ask you about was, of course, the fame question. A short while after the series went off the air, you wrote a book, I Am Not Spock.
Yeah.
About 10 years after that, you wrote another book, I Am Spock.
That's also true, yeah.
So which is it? Which is it, Leonard Nimoy? Are you or are you not Spock?
Well, you know, it's a question of the duality of the actor's life. I was and I am and I used to be and I still am, and sometimes I'm not.
Depends on the day, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Have you participated in the great, huge fan community? Have you gone to the conventions?
I have.
And how do you find that experience?
Well, it's heartwarming.
You see the Klingons at the elevators and take a right.
No, it's, the press, obviously, when the press comes to a convention, they immediately go to the people who are in costumes for the video. Yeah. But there are a lot of normal people.
Really?
Yeah.
They wandered in by mistake.
No, they're wonderful. No. Don't do that. Don't go there.
Look, I attended one once. And when I was a kid, a Mr. Spock jacket.
Were you in a Klingon outfit?
I had a Mr. Spock jacket. It looked like your tunic. It was blue, indicating
really?
A science officer.
Yeah.
And it had a little Federation symbol. I was very proud of
it. That's great.
At one point, I was writing about Evander Holyfield when he was heavyweight champion of the world. And he was staying in a hotel for his training, and there was a Star Trek convention in the hotel, and the last thing I saw of Evander Holyfield, he was standing waiting in an elevator surrounded by Klingons. It's one of the most amazing things
he could take them, though.
We appealed to a wide spectrum of an audience, and as a matter of fact, about a year and a half ago, I was at a political event, and one of our current campaigners for the office of President of the United States saw me approach as he approached, and he gave me the Vulcan signal.
There you go.
Yeah. It was not John McCain.
I was about to say. I was about to say. there have been, starting with, I guess, Star Trek Next Generation, I guess it was in 87, so yeah. many different spinoffs. Have you been involved in some of them? Have you watched them? Are you a fan of these new Star Trek?
No.
You're done.
No.
Really?
No.
Whoa.
You know why?
Really, what's your feeling about it?
No, I don't mean it to denigrate. I actually, when I first heard that they were going to do this with a whole new bunch of people, my ego kicked in, and I thought, well, that's not going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then many years later, they were still on the air, and I couldn't understand it.
It's like, wait a minute, we got canceled after three seasons.
Yeah,
what
yeah. No, they did very, very well. They did a lot of good work.
But the later productions that were not true.
I think I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They weren't real.
Yeah.
They didn't go into space.
Not like you guys did.
That's right.
Like you guys really went to all these other planets that were made entirely of styrofoam.
That's right.
Can I ask a non-dweeb question?
We'll be the judge of that.
The ears. It was about
just
the ears, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So those were like foam, right?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
They were.
So do you have like a pair on like your mantle as like a keepsake?
Do you really?
I do, yeah.
You kept a pair of the Spock ears?
I do.
I have one pair, yeah.
Wow.
I have the pair that was that I wore on the very last day of filming of the original series.
Right. You took them home.
The real series.
That's great. The real series.
I'm very touched that you asked me that question. I am.
I can't believe this. You're not even a fan, and he likes you best. I'm so mad.
That's very nice. Thank you.
She doesn't even have the jammies.
I knew we shouldn't let any girls in here. I wanted to ask you about the movies.
You'll pardon me, but you are now the butt of the joke here.
Yeah, I know. So, I did want to ask you about the next Star Trek movie. You've been in a bunch of movies. You directed one or two of them? Two of them?
Two of them,
And the next one is directed, of course, by J.J. Abrams, progenitor of Lost and other TV shows. And this is going to be the one that shows the characters of the original Star Trek series, Spock, McCoy, Kirk, of course, as young men and women coming out of the academy. So there will be, for the first time ever, another actor playing Spock.
At least one other. Yeah.
But you're in the movie, too.
Yes, I am.
How, sir, is that possible?
Through the magic of film.
I see. Are you telling me they have more than one pair of ears?
It's actually, I tell you, seriously, I really believe this is going to be a brilliant film. J.J. Abrams, who directed it, is a very, very talented guy. I think it's going to be a great film. It'll be out next June.
Right.
And it's called Star Trek.
Just Star Trek. Just.
I don't know if it has a subtitle, but right now it's just called Star Trek.
It could be like, for example, Star Trek, Those Guys Again.
Yeah, yeah, it could be, yeah.
Star Trek, Kirk, When He Was Hot.
That's right.
For example.
Or When He Was Thin. Yeah.
One or the other.
Yeah.
Whoa! Hello. Yeah.
All right. I heard you guys had a little bit of a rivalry at the time. You and Bill Shatner?
No. We're very good friends.
You've done so much in your career. You've done photography. You've done poetry, music, acting. You've mind-melded with the silicon rock creature in the episode Devil in the Dark.
Good Lord.
One of our better episodes.
I thought so, too.
Yeah. Do you remember the moment? No.
No, come on, baby. Because I do. That's the thing. But my question for you is you're still so busy. Is there anything that you haven't done yet that you want to do or you want to do next?
No. I have no unfulfilled fantasy, no unfulfilled dreams. I left Boston when I was a kid. I was 18 years old. My dream was to make a living as an actor. And I've had great opportunities. And Star Trek particularly, there isn't a day goes by that people don't say to me, that show influenced my life. It affected my life in a positive way. So it's more than my dream has come true. I'm a very happy guy.
Ladies and gentlemen. Let me just qualify that statement. You're a happy guy up to this very point.
All right.
Because now...
All right. No. That's true. That's true.
We have invited you here to play a game that we're calling...
You're Not That Spock Either.
Oh, Wow. So how weird was it that during the 1960s, two men named Spock would become world famous?
Yeah.
You were the cool, greenish, logical Spock. We thought we'd ask you about the area of expertise of the other Spock, Benjamin Spock. We're going to ask you three questions about the history of child rearing, taken from the book Raising America by Anne Hulbert. And if you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Leonard Nimoy playing for?
He's playing for James Gallagher of Plymouth, Michigan.
Oh, boy. Here, sir, is your first question. Dr. Luther Emmett Holt was the author of an 1894 child care book called The Care and Feeding of Children. He was optimistic in his book about very young children. He thought they could be trained to do what? A, speak a foreign language if you placed books in that language in their crib for them to play with. B, use a toilet correctly by the age of 3 months, but only if you, quote, start early. Or C, hunt, kill, and eat their own food if given freedom to pursue their natural instincts and a stick.
I would go for number two.
Very logical, sir. Yes, you were correct.
Yeah.
The good doctor said that toilet training is, quote, easily done by the third month if training is begun early.
How early?
I don't know.
Prenatally.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Prenatally, yeah.
That's very good. Here's your next question. The next great American childcare expert was one Dr. John Broadus Watson. He was the author of Psychological Care of Infant and Child, published in the 20s. He lectured Americans for what he thought was a terrible habit. What? A, kissing, hugging, or otherwise being physically affectionate toward their children. B, feeding their children cow milk, which he was afraid would give them the physical attributes of cows. Or C, speaking to infants in baby talk, which he felt inhibited mental acuity and, quote, raised a nation of babblers.
Babblers?
Babblers. Babblers.
Babblers.
Babblers.
Uh-huh. I'd go for that.
You'd go for that. He didn't want them to talk baby talk.
Yeah.
No, it was actually he didn't want them to kiss or hug their children. He said, Parents who kissed and hugged their children, quote, are slowly building up a human being totally unable to cope with the world it must later live in, unquote. Instead, he suggested, at most, giving your child a firm handshake. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why your parents and grandparents were so screwed up. Here you go. Last question. Very exciting. This is, of course, about Dr. Spock himself. He became famous for his advocacy of a more permissive parenting style in the 60s. Once in an interview, he made a remarkable confession. What was it? A, when at home after work, he liked to spend hours playing with dolls. B, he couldn't abide rude children at all and always wanted to spank them. Or C, as a child, he himself was allowed to do whatever he wanted and he always hated his parents for that.
Wow. Logic doesn't even work here.
No.
Let's go for number one.
You're going to go for number one. Yeah. At home after work, he liked to spend hours playing with dolls.
Yeah.
It's incorrect. I'm so sorry. He couldn't abide rude children. He said to the Ladies' Home Journal, quote, I can hardly bear to be around rude children. I have the impulse to spank them and to give a lecture to their parents.
Shame on him.
Isn't it awful?
Yeah.
Carl, how did Leonard Nimoy do in our quiz?
Well, Spock would have gotten all three right, Peter.
You know he would.
Leonard Nimoy.
I guess I'm not.
We figured it out. We've settled the question.
But Leonard Nimoy got just one correct answer, and he needed two to win for James Gallagher.
I'm so sorry. Leonard Nimoy is an actor, director, writer, and photographer. He's best known for playing the character Spock from Star Trek, the original series, and will appear in the upcoming Star Trek movie coming out next year. Leonard Nimoy, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Space, a final frontier.
Okay, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. And let's start with a much-awaited new edition of Wait, Wait, On the Trail!
Yee-haw! Dadgummit, it's good to slip my boots back in these stirrups.
We feel the same, Carl.
Thank you,
buddy.
We
feel the same. You're going to talk like that for the rest of the show, aren't you?
You bet, fella.
Charlie, it's hard sometimes to remember this, but currently there are two people running for vice president of the United States. Yes, it's true. The other one is named Joe Biden. He's a Democrat. And last week, he was doing a campaign event in St. Louis, and he asked a state senator named Chuck Graham to stand up and take a bow for the crowd, but Mr. Graham simply would not. Why?
Because Mr. Graham is, alas, in a wheelchair.
In fact, that's right. We presume that this is what happened. A campaign aide is sitting there preparing a list of local politicians for Senator Biden's use at the speech. And at one point, this aide said to him or herself, you know, should I note that Senator Graham is in a wheelchair? No, what kind of politician would be so oafish that he would call on a paraplegic to stand up in public? But as the gossip website TMZ said of the incident, sit happens. Now, Mr. Biden, to his credit, recovered nicely. He apologized. He asked the crowd to stand up for Senator Graham. Instead, they did. It's just a shame that it wasn't Senator Obama who asked Graham to stand up from his wheelchair, because then he would have suddenly been able to. Roxanne, we can't resist any longer. Sarah Palin, this week, the New York Times published an investigative piece into how Governor Palin actually runs Alaska. One example, upon taking office, she appointed a childhood friend to head up the State Department of Agriculture, a $95,000 a year job. Now, this woman was a real estate agent. She was not a farmer, not an agriculture expert, but Palin said she was qualified anyway because as a child, this woman had done what?
She loves cows.
She loved cows as a child, and that's why Governor Palin thought she should head the Alaska State Agriculture Commission. We don't know if Miss Francie Havemeister actually had relationships with any cows as a child.
What?
Or, well, you know, in a friendly way. If she knew them, if she liked them personally, if it was more of an admiration.
Are you smearing Sarah
at a distance
Palin again?
Thing. I am. I can't help it.
But she could see Jersey from her house.
She could. She occasionally drank milk and liked it. The Times reported that Governor Palin hired five of her childhood friends for state positions, including a friend who now heads the state treasury because as a kid he was really good at Monopoly. Charlie, Google never tires of finding new places to store your personal data, and this week they're talking about a new plan. Where is the company looking to locate the server farms of the future?
Outer space.
Not quite.
Inner space.
Well, far away, offshore, if you will. But
offshore, at the bottom of the sea?
Not the bottom.
The top of the sea?
Yes, on offshore floating barges.
Offshore.
The Times of London.
So we're having offshore drilling and offshore caching.
Exactly.
Excellent.
The Times of London reported this week that Google is considering a plan to float its data centers on barges up to 7 miles offshore. In a patent application, Google points out the ability of floating data centers to capture wave energy and save electricity. Others, though, have noted that getting away from dry land can save Google a fortune in property taxes and might even allow them to evade privacy laws pertinent in certain countries. Users can look forward to a time when their internet service will be reliable and energy efficient, except when the data center is boarded by pirates or scurvy strikes the IT guys, those who don't already have it, or a pelican lands on the big red reset button.
Sorry, are these barge going to, like, go around the world and never come into a port, or are they just going to sit in one place?
I think they'll sit in one place and just silently think to themselves about us.
I mean, do we lose the data if it all falls into the ocean?
If it all sinks?
Is there, like, data floating all over the ocean like an oil
they'll
spill?
They'll start washing up like those sneakers.
These are my emails over there on that bird. Look. I have an info spill that ruins an entire space of coastline. My God, there's Wikipedia killing all the seals. Look.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago. And you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Luca Criminale from Leavenworth, Washington.
Leavenworth, Washington. Where's that?
Leavenworth, Washington is just in north central Washington. It's a quaint little Bavarian theme town.
A Bavarian theme town? So it's all like gingerbread and
maypoles, dirndls. Yep, you got it.
Why is it that?
It's a sort of a tourist town, and so the Bavarian theme brings in tourists on a weekly basis.
Wow. Was it founded by actual Bavarians, or was just somebody came up with something a couple years ago?
Somebody came up with something.
Wow. Luca, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is now going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
I am ready.
Here is your first limerick.
My change purse has one major flaw. It unhinges most male viewers' jaw. They are sorely impressed when I reach for my breasts for this caddy that rests in my...
Bra?
Bra, yes. We've all seen this, the lady who discreetly reaches into her cleavage to retrieve hidden cash. Well, thanks to an entrepreneur named Laura McLaren, you might be able to soon hide your life savings in there. McLaren has come up with the cleavage caddy. A bra insert, she says, is like having a purse in your bra, and who hasn't wanted that? The insert has pockets. It comes in several different sizes and styles, from the Callista Flockhart, intended for a key and a lipstick, to the Pamela Anderson, which can hold a cell phone, water bottle, and small dog, to the Tom Arnold, which can hold Cleveland. Very good. Here's your next limerick.
On Mondays, we often converse about weekends that seem to be cursed. We long to have fun, but where was the sun? It seems weekend weather is...
worst.
Right. You've looked out the window on a Saturday. Everybody's done this. You've seen the wind and the rain, and you say, hey, it always seems to rain on the weekends. According to a new study, you are not crazy. German meteorologists evaluated climate data over a 14-year period. They determined that, on average, Saturdays are the coldest, wettest, and dreariest day of the week. And the best part, according to scientists, it's your own darn fault. Exhaust gases emitted during the work week cause fine dust, which gets into the atmosphere, builds up to ruin the weekend. Next up, scientists are designing an experiment to test the proposition that bad stuff always happens to you.
Wait a minute, though. So if we want to have really good weather on Saturday, we shouldn't work during the week.
Exactly.
Hey!
Well, it turns out...
I'm on board, Al.
For that reason, the best weather is usually Monday and Tuesday. Because people have been driving along.
I'm perfectly willing not to go to work if it means I get a good day on Saturday.
There you go. Here is your last limerick.
Though we think we choose the right tracks, our willpower frequently cracks. Our mind might say fruit, but then candy says scoot. You know you crave unhealthy...
snacks.
Yes! What is more powerful than the human will? A Little Debbie snack cake. That's what. Dutch scientists asked 585 test subjects to choose between four proposed snacks, an apple, a banana, a candy bar, and a molasses waffle. Approximately half of the participants claimed they would choose one of the healthy snacks. But when confronted with the same snacks in a sneak attack a week later, more than 27% of the people who said they'd eat the fruit folded like a cheap suit and went after the sugary stuff like a starving weasel. Scientists were unable to comment on the meaning of the study as they were occupied fighting with the test subjects over the last waffle. Carl, how did Luca do in our quiz?
Three correct answers, Peter. So, Luca, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well, thank you so much. It's better than winning the lottery.
Isn't it, though? Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you very much.
When you enjoy, joy, joy, your fluff and peanut butter, you're glad you have enough for another fluffer nutter.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as they can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Roxanne Roberts and Charlie Pierce each has 4 points. Paula Poundstone has 1.
All right.
I don't know how I could be that far behind already.
All right, Paula, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Karl Rove said that blank had gone too far in his campaign attack ads.
John McCain.
Yes, also he said that about Obama. Chinese police have arrested almost 20 people in connection with a scandal involving tainted blank.
Milk.
Baby formula.
Baby.
Close enough, close enough.
Thank you.
Secretary Dirk Kempthorne said he would expand oversight in the wake of the sex scandal at the blank department.
At the Interior Department.
Right. The leader of blank said that the U.S. gave no advance warning of missile strikes earlier this week.
Pakistan?
Right. Hearts in Blaine, Washington swelled with pride at the news that a local teenager had officially broken the world record for blanking.
Eating cannolis.
No, blowing up balloons with his nose. MTV announced that after 10 years in the air, it was canceling blank.
MTV.
No, TRL or Total Request Live. Yeah. General Motors unveiled its electric car known as the blank on Tuesday.
Known as the go.
No, the Volt. The Chevy Volt. British drivers stuck in traffic were horrified to see their cars being passed by a blank.
By a scooter.
No, by a hamster in a little plastic play ball. Treacle, the hamster's owner, was cleaning her cage. Treacle made her move. She maneuvered her plastic ball out the front door and out onto the highway. Treacle was making pretty good time when, according to driver Nick Smith, quote, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, a hamster overtaking us in its plastic ball. It was quite happily trundling along.
See, there's alternative forms of energy out there.
This is actually the second escaped hamster in a play ball story that we've done from Britain. They're busting out. Where
exactly,
are they trying?
Because they're ahead of us in this kind of research.
Where are they trying to get? Is there a group of hamsters somewhere in England going, well, I think we should wait a little bit more. He'll be here in a minute. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 9 points, and Paula has the lead.
All right. We flipped a coin. Roxanne has elected to go next. Fill in the blank, Roxanne. On Tuesday, the House approved a partial lifting of the ban on blanking.
Drilling.
Right, offshore drilling. Tzipi Livni, the foreign minister of blank, won the leadership of the ruling Kadima Party.
Israel.
Right. Motorists in Minneapolis honked to show their approval of a new blank built to replace the one that collapsed 14 months ago.
The bridge.
Right. Best Buy announced that it had purchased online music supplier blank for $121 million.
Oh, who did they take? Music supplier. Oh.
Napster.
That's
police
right.
In Russia have charged 11 suspects with attempting to blank via an underwater pipeline.
To steal gas.
No, to pump vodka from Russia to Estonia.
Oh, that's right.
Richard Wright, a founding member of the band Blank, died at age 65.
Led Zeppelin.
No, Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd.
Microsoft pulled 2 ads featuring comedian Blank after running them for less than 2 weeks.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Right. A naked man attempting to streak during a soccer game in Australia was easily captured by security when he blanked.
Threw himself in the goal.
No, when he leapt onto the playing field and immediately tripped and knocked himself out cold. To be a successful streaker, you have to do 2 things. You have to be naked and you have to be able to run. He got the naked part down. He jumped onto the field during a game between United and Hummocks Watchman Eagles in Australia. But the running part was hard. He immediately tripped, whacked his head against the pitch, knocked himself out. He completed his streak unconscious and on a stretcher as ambulance volunteers helped him finish his journey. Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 12 points, and Roxanne has taken the lead.
Pink Floyd, all right. Huh?
Pink Floyd, yeah.
All right, go get him.
Go get him. All right, Charlie. How many does Charlie need to win?
He needs 4 to tie and 5 to win outright.
All right. Ready to go. This is for the game, Charlie.
Live long and prosper, Peter.
You too, Charlie.
Thank you.
Fill in the blank. President Bush visited the Gulf Coast to survey the damage done by blank.
Hurricane Ike.
Right. Anonymous hackers gained access to blank's Yahoo email account, which she sometimes used to conduct state business.
Sarah Palin.
Right. Investigators said that the engineer of the commuter train that crashed in Los Angeles last week was blanking on the job.
Texting.
Right. Best known for his novel Infinite Jest, blank died at age 46.
David Foster Wallace.
Yes. Very sad. A new study from Cambridge University suggests that men who drink instant coffee or eat Brazilian nuts are more likely to have blank.
Brown teeth.
No, large breasts. Pennsylvania announced that it was banning blanking at all state universities.
Smoking.
Right. The father of actress Lindsay Lohan slammed blank after he turned down her offer to campaign for him.
Barack Obama.
Right. Zookeepers in Britain are reporting yet another sad case of a zoo parrot blanking.
Throwing its voice to make the bear look silly.
No. Swearing at the visitor.
Oh, no.
Max, the African gray, has zookeeper Wankers. Peter Handsome on edge. Said Handsome, quote, I hold my breath when parents stand with small children at his cage. Sometimes he'll just say hello or bye, but as often as not, it's bleep off. It's usually when people are walking away and they least expect it. His favorite trick is to stick his head in a tin cup in his cage and then swear. He seems to know it makes a louder sound.
That's great.
Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He needed 5 to win outright. He had 6
Hey,
correct answers.
Well done.
So, with 16 points, Charlie Pierce is this week's champion.
Now, this week, as we mentioned, this week, some hackers broke into Sarah Palin's Yahoo email account. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to read out for you some of the Sarah Palin personal emails that will be leaked to the press. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and are the members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners on the web at Realtor.com, the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication on the web at AnnenbergFoundation.org, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at GatesFoundation.org. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Emily Ecton and Linda Holmes. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what was in Sarah Palin's inbox? Paula Poundstone.
To Rick Davis, McCain campaign manager, R.E. Charlie Gibson interview. Rick, I've emailed John repeatedly but haven't heard back from him. Just wanted to make sure he knows that during my Charlie Gibson interview, I just said I didn't blink when he asked me to be his running mate. Really, I was blown away. I mean, come on. I'm the governor of Alaska. I'm busy with five kids. I mean, hockey mom doesn't exactly beef up any resume. Of course I blinked. I was up all night trying to remember the pit bull lipstick joke. Sarah.
Roxanne Roberts.
To Karl Rove from your favorite governor. Hey, dude boy. Hope you love the speech. Can't wait to see you. If I'm wearing my hair up, your room. If down, my room. And if I take my glasses off, the Fox News booth.
Charlie Pierce.
To Sarah from Russia. Re us. OMG. OMG. We all see you, too.
Well, if any of those messages are discovered, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Charlie Pierce. Thanks to our fabulous audience here at the Chase Bank in Chicago. Thanks to all of you out there in Radio Land for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.